I think also the other term that gets a little bit misinterpreted is we wear thongs over here on our feet,
Ah,
but
yeah.
Something very different in
I
America.
think Cisco gave a bit of a different meaning to thongs over there in the
Yeah, I
States.
think so too. If we wore those on our feet, it would be a very scandalous situation.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com, and I am your host Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And this is episode 271, and it's a special episode.
Yeah, it is. So we have Tanika Anderson and Stevie Nicholson here, who were part of the Australian group High Five. And for those of you who don't know about High Five, let me tell you a little bit of a story.
Yeah, for sure. I think you need to really set up what we're doing here this week.
I do need to set this up. This is different. So one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons why we do this show is I really do love talking to creative people about the things that they do. And I kind of leech off their inspiration. And, you know, it just makes me feel good to talk to creatives, which is why we've been doing this for so long. And I'm a new dad, so my kid's about to turn one. And we've been watching this show, High Five, on Netflix, and he absolutely loves it. It's sort of like a singing, dancing, you know, just an explosion of fun and creativity and song and puppets. And, you know, just like it reminds me totally of like the Muppets or Sesame Street or something that I used to, or Fraggle Rock, something that I used to watch when I was a little kid, you know. And there's something about it that still just kind of just makes me happy to watch it with him. I'm like, oh, like I get it. So I've been watching this show with him, and one of the songs on the show got like horribly stuck in my head. And it's a song called The Gumboot Garden, which is about growing a garden inside of an old like pair of like water shoes or galoshes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this song stuck in my head. I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm singing this song. And my wife like rolls over to me. She's like, what the hell are you singing? I'm like, I'm singing the Gumboot Garden song from High Five. And on a whim, I ended up just tweeting at Tanika. And I was like, hey, like I can't get this Gumboot Garden song stuck out, you know, out of my head. It's totally stuck. And she messaged back to me. That's a good song. Da, 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 da. And I was just like, why don't you come on the show and talk about, you know, touring and talk about High Five and song and dance and all that fun stuff. And not only did she come on, but Stevie from the show came on as well. So this is our first time we've interviewed directors and actors and game developers and musicians, but we have never interviewed people from a children's show. So this is our first time doing that, and it's going to be pretty fun, I think, for you guys.
Yeah, I think I think the themes are the same, though. It's like it's all about, you know, people being creative and, you know, finding that outlet and exercising a talent. And this is, you know, I got to hear some of this interview already, and it's just a really interesting take on even things like being in a band, you know, but the band that you're in is a children's group, you know, that tours like around the world. Right. So it's a very fascinating interview, I think, for many reasons.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing that's kind of crazy is like we in the United States may not be super familiar with High Five, but if you are, you know, in that part of the world, Australia, et cetera, you know, they've been around for nearly 20 years and they're sort of an institution. So it's exciting to have them on. And honestly, like I had so much fun talking to the both of them, to both Stevie and Tanika. I hope they come back on in the future when they have some more cool stuff to talk about, because they were just an absolute blast.
But before we get to the interview, really quick, this episode is brought to you by Audible. Audible.com is, you know, the place where you can go to listen to tons of audiobooks on all kinds of different topics and, you know, informational, sci-fi, romance, whatever. I mean, I think a lot of us probably here do sci-fi. I'm really hopped up on the Star Wars series right now. And so my really quick Audible pick is actually a book that's being released as we speak, which is Rebel Rising, which is sort of the like a prequel novel to Rogue One, if you will. So it follows Jyn Erso, I think, in her time between Saw Gerrera and where we find her in the film. So I'm interested to check that out. You can go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA, and if you sign up with Audible, you get a free audiobook download, which is yours to keep whether or not you decide to stay on with Audible or not. And then Matt has a pick as well, right?
I do. So I was interested in watching the new show American Gods on Stars, which is originally adapted from a Neil Gaiman novel by the same name. And I went back and picked it up and then got the Audible book as an add-on for my Kindle.
Nice.
And it is so good. It's fully voiced. All the characters have their own individual voices.
That's awesome.
I can't tell if it's the main narrator doing all of the voices. If it is, he's incredibly good at all of the voices, but I haven't looked up the voice cast yet. But it's super engaging. I was never a huge Gaiman fan. Like, I didn't read Sandman super heavily when I was into comic books. It was like too out there, I think, for my teenage brain. And so I was never a giant reader of his, but this book is crazy. It's super interesting, more on the fantasy side, I would say, but it, kind of like a really an Americana book on top of that. They do a lot of traveling through the country. And I'm trying to hold off from the show until I finish the book. So I picked it up and I highly recommend it. It was, I think, like, it wasn't too big of a deal when I got it too. So head on over to that URL and try out American Gods if you haven't listened to that or read it yet. Recommend it before we do the show.
Nice. Great pick. That's so you can go to audibletrial.com/ratedNA and help support the show and get an audiobook to check out.
All right, so here is our interview with Tanique Anderson and Stevie Nicholson. Enjoy.
Woot.
Yay!
You guys are so cheery. This is already so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on. This is like it's sort of surreal because at this point in my life, I'm watching you guys about every day. Because my son is about to turn one and he's absolutely obsessed with the show. We kind of stumbled across it. It's on American Netflix now, and I think the only season of High Five that's on American Netflix is I think here it's season 16, I want to say.
I think that's correct.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it's my wife and I are both teachers. So my wife teaches second grade, and I was a 10th grade teacher for about 7 years. And then I left to move into tech and do fun stuff like this for a living. But, you know, as teachers, the thing that we noticed is that, well, first of all, we noticed that you guys are insanely talented and you guys are just incredibly fun to watch. But the show, you know, High Five was really smart. It was really well done. And all the different skits were like super, super educational and just, you know, they, unfortunately on American TV, especially if you look through American Netflix as a parent, there's a lot of garbage on there and it wasn't that. So we lucked into finding something, I think, that was pretty special.
It's always lovely to hear, especially from teachers, but I guess the foundations of High Five is really built on, you know, an ethical standpoint, and I guess we refer to it as edutainment. Yeah. And the basis for each segment, you know, the writing period that something like High Five goes through is like, it's unbelievable. It's months and months of writing to make sure that each segment itself really ticks all the boxes from an educational standpoint, and then we're able to bring the fun and add all the musical elements. And,
yeah,
and
we have early childhood advisors overseeing everything to make sure it all meets the standards for the parents back home.
I want to talk about how you guys, one of the things I love to do is figure out where people got their start and how they got to where they are today. Because that's always, the journey is always really exciting to me. So Tanique, I was reading a little bit about an interview you did a while ago about how you were a busker when you were a kid, okay, so we don't use that term in the United States, and I was a teacher, and I'm like, oh my god, I don't even know what this word means. I actually had to go and look it up on Google and be like, what does this even mean? What was she? So can you explain to our listeners what the heck a busker is and a little bit about your history of busking?
Okay, I'd love to explain to you guys. All right, so basically, I'll start from the beginning. I was born in Brisbane, Australia, and then when I was about one, I moved to Thailand and spent my early childhood growing up in Thailand. And then moved to Australia, grew up in Sydney. And during my time in school, on weekends and after school, I would busk, which is basically me standing on the streets in the city with a cowboy hat in front of me, singing my guts out.
That's amazing.
All kinds of songs. Then sometimes I'd even chuck a few cartwheels in, and because I was really, you know, I was like 10 years old at the time, so people would show a lot of support. I don't know whether I was any good or not, but the fact that they saw this cute little girl singing and dancing on the streets meant that I got a lot of support. And that was kind of my, I think that was the best training I ever had, because, you know, it takes a lot of guts to stand up in front of a bunch of strangers and perform.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of gave me a lot of confidence to move forward into the future doing what I do now.
That's so you did a lot of what sort of stuff did you do as a street performer? Like what was your typical act on like a Sunday morning?
My typical act was probably made up of We Are Australian. I would sing that song on repeat. I would sing a song from the musical Sweet Charity, and I'd also sing a song from Chicago because they seem to be the hits. And I'd chuck in a couple of cartwheels, and it wasn't until I was about, I think, 12 years old. I was busking for a couple of years, and when I was 12 years old, someone chucked a card into my hat, and I picked up the card from the hat, and it was a picture of SpongeBob SquarePants. And I was like, well, this is weird. Why would anyone chuck a picture of SpongeBob SquarePants into the hat? And I turned it around, and it was the general manager of Nickelodeon.
Oh, no way.
And yeah. So that was kind of where I landed my first gig, was doing some work for them. And I'm still in contact with them now.
Oh, that's great.
But amazing happened.
That, all that from busking. There you go. Did you at some point work for Universal, doing some stuff for Universal, like stage show on Universal?
Yes, I did. So when I turned 18, I left home and moved to Singapore, and I worked at Singapore Universal Studios as a performer for about 2 years as a singer and dancer, and that was the best training that I ever had. You know, we were singing and dancing, doing four shows a day out in the 40-degree heat in Singapore.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that really built up my stamina and kind of prepared me for High Five, which was about to become an even more epic journey.
Yeah, we'll get to the High Five stuff in a little bit, because I can't even, like, just reading up on like how much you guys traveled and how much you guys did, it seemed like it was a pretty epic adventure. Quickly about Universal, one winter I did here in Orlando, we have Halloween Horror Nights, which is like a big Halloween thing at Universal. And the best job I ever had was as a monster for one Halloween. I spent about 2 months as a monster, and it actually helped cure me. I used to have really bad stage fright, and working as a monster helped me get rid of my stage fright. And then I could have never have become a teacher if I was not, you know, cured of my stage fright. So, yeah, Universal was great. It was a lot of fun to work there.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so funny. I actually did Halloween Horror Nights as well at Universal Studios in Singapore. And I was the face of, I think, Halloween Horror Nights 3.
Oh, you were.
And I played the main the opera.
Oh, so that's awesome. Basically,
I was like the Chinese version of a geisha, basically. And I was kind of like this porcelain doll where they put cracks into my face.
Oh,
and
nice.
It was totally opposite to High Five. really scary. And, you know, it's hard not to laugh at yourself when you're doing that stuff. But when you look back at it and see, you know, when we film commercials for it, it actually is pretty scary.
Yeah, my position was nothing quite that glamorous. They had a room that had a strobe light in it, and they put me in a black and white striped jumpsuit in the strobe light room because they realized I was only like one of like five of the actors that could not vomit if I was in there for 45 minutes. So I just stared at the strobe light for like a couple months of my life, and I think it probably did some sort of psychological damage, but maybe that's why I went into education. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't one of the people hanging upside down in the body bags going through the horror house. That
right.
would have been the worst.
Right. What about you, Stevie? What, I mean, you were with High Five for a while, but what was like little Stevie Like, did you have aspirations to sing and dance and perform from a very young age, or is that something you kind of eased into later on?
I started out as a journalist. So I was an assistant editor of Australian Tennis Magazine. And so I was traveling the world on the tennis tour in London and French Open, and that was a lot of fun. And one, I was working at Wimbledon when I was about 21, and I ended up enrolling at the Royal Academy for Dramatic Art, RADA, in London. I studied Shakespeare there. And, wow. Yeah, and so off the back of that, then sort of came back to Australia. I got into the National Institute for Dramatic Art here, NIDA, and then literally fell into high five after that. So, yeah, it was a bit of a different background. Grew up in sort of as a journalist in sort of a sporting background. And, you know, I grew up, you know, imagining I was Michael Jackson in the living room like most kids my age.
Absolutely.
And so I ended up sort of moonwalking my way into high five, and that was sort of, 10 years of my life. But, I guess, like, for me, I was pretty thankful to have had a career outside of actual performing, because there's a lot of kids, a lot of, you know, actors, their whole life they've been singing and dancing, and by the time they actually get, you know, they're working, you know, sort of 22, 23, 24, they're pretty burnt out because they've already had 15, 16 years of training. A lot of our mates just get sick of it by the time they're 30. So I feel sort of like a bit of a spring chicken still, because it's, I don't feel burnt out. I feel like I'm sort of just, which is really nice.
I always find, like, when we do interviews, that the people that I find the most interesting are the ones that come from really kind of diverse and different backgrounds. Like the fact that you were a journalist before, it just, you know, it kind of gives you an entirely different dynamic than someone who has just been doing that, you know, for their whole life. So.
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, you know, as your job as an actor and as a performer is to find the truth and realness, whether it is something like High Five, which is performing for kids, or whether it's, you're acting in a drama or Shakespearean piece or whatever, you're always looking for some sort of truth. And you're only able to get that if, I guess, you've experienced it and you're able to tap into reality. And I feel really fortunate enough to have traveled a lot working. And I find that, you're really able to, within the industry, identify with people who come from a bit of a different background, and they are able to bring that to the work.
So let's jump on over to Tanika for a minute. And basically, what I love to do before interviews is I kind of like, I don't want to call it, I do a lot of research on the people I interview, just because I like to go in kind of armed. And so you started a dance school with your mom when you were 17. Is that true?
Yeah, that was the start of my entrepreneur. You know, when I was 17, I said to mom, I was like, I want to become a teacher. I want to open up my own school, because I found that growing up, you know, learning to dance, so much of it wasn't just about the skills that you had, but it was so focused on, you know, what you looked like and the competition. And it just wasn't a very nice environment to be in half the time. So I said to mom, I want to open up my own dance school where we focus less on the points and turns and more about the kids and just having fun and encouraging them to encourage one another and support one another. Because I think that's lacking in the entertainment industry.
Right, I think it's lacking in education as well. I think, you know, one of the things that myself as an educator for a long time, the thing that I tried to bring to the classroom was just that you try and bring a little bit of fun when a lot of other teachers are focusing on numbers and, you know, the technical aspects of learning. It's a lot of times it's almost better to teach them, you know, how to support and respect one another, you know, and you can definitely do that through dance as well. Yeah, that's what I mean. One of the things that, shifting gears kind of to High Five a little bit, I mean, that's one of the things that I noticed about High Five is, like, it did have a very positive message. And it's one that, like, you know, you guys mentioned it being a digital babysitter. It's like, I don't really feel too guilty letting him watch it and learn from it, because I think, like, you know, the majority of it is very, very positive. So let's jump on over and how you guys ended up becoming cast members, and then we'll jump on over to Super Dudes because I want to learn all about that. But let's see. So High Five, how did Stevie, how did you get cast, and what was your experience like for almost 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. High Five in Australia is a bit of an institution. We're really lucky that the quality of children's entertainment in Australia is what it is. Like the Wiggles, who are also very popular in the States and all around the world, come from Australia as well. And, you know, I grew up, you know, very aware of High Five. Never in a million years did I think I'd actually be in High Five. But High Five had been going for a number of years, and I got a call that they were looking for an understudy for the original members. I thought, yeah, that sounds cool. That sounds like a pretty easy gig because these guys never miss shows. And so I auditioned for the role of understudy on the Wednesday. On the Friday, I got the job, and I went out and celebrated with friends. And so I rocked up to work on the Monday for my first ever day of work as the understudy for High Five. And I was sitting in the car park waiting to go in. I was very nervous because, you know, the High Five members that I'd grown up with were sort of like gods. You know, they were very much celebrities in Australia, and I was pretty intimidated. And I was about to go in, and the phone rang, and it was my agent, and he just said, look, heads up, one of the original members just had a motorbike accident, and it was unfortunately injured, but it means that you're on deck, you're one of the members, man. You know, and wow. And I was like, wow, you know, so I walked into the room for my first day at work, and obviously they were obviously upset about one of the members being injured, but it was like, wow, I'm actually in High Five. You know, there I was sort of singing and dancing. So from that point, it was like a crash course in this crazy world of children's entertainment where, you know, you're traveling all around the world singing and dancing to, you know, stadiums filled with, screaming kids, and you're filming TV, and you're walking the red carpet and recording albums. And, you know, and I guess the most bizarre thing about something like High Five is you're playing yourself. Like, my name's Stevie on screen and off screen. So you'll be walking down, you know, the supermarket, and you look down and there's three kids hanging off your leg giving you a hug, you know, and it's just like, it's like, wow, I never really imagined that would be something that would be that I get to experience. And, you know, the opportunity to record albums with, you know, just the creative people that you get the opportunity to work with is quite extraordinary. So, yeah, so for me, like, coming from a journalistic background, I just threw myself into the creative side of High Five and ended up writing, producing, and even directing a lot of the stuff that we ended up filming. So for 10 years... we had a number of different cast members come in and out of the group, and I guess I was there to sort of saw my role as sort of helping to welcome them into this crazy world, and yeah, it's a fascinating thing because you are working with in a really, really tight group of people of five individuals where you're having breakfast, lunch, dinner together for years, you know, years and years and years.
And you better get, and it seemed like you guys got along from the episode or for season 16. It seemed like you guys got along quite well.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredible atmosphere. It's pretty hard. Like, you hard to not enjoy it, because there'd be days at work when you're filming and you sort of look at each other, and I'd look at Tanika and she's dressed in a cow suit, and then I'm dressed in a
pig.
Yeah, I'm dressed as a pig, and we're singing songs, and it's just like, man, like,
what are our lives?
What are our lives? Right. When did it become a thing that we did for every day? So, yeah, it's been, I thoroughly enjoy High Five, and I have, despite the fact that we're both no longer in High Five, I just think that it's a wonderful program, and the creative people behind it really do a remarkable job of remaining on point with kids. And, you know, it's so lovely to see that engagement from families as well.
Well, it's great that after, you know, so long, you still have such kind things to say about it. I mean, a lot of people, you know, after they leave a job, any job after a decade, they're like, I want to burn that place to the ground and I want nothing to do with it. So I think that's great that you you still hold it in such high regard. Tanico, what about yourself? I kind of read a little bit about how you got involved, and you have kind of a similar you know, cast randomly sort of situation, but I want to hear your story.
Yeah, so basically I was working at Universal Studios, and it was one of the directors of the company came to watch my shows, and from there on he kind of asked me to audition for High Five, and it was about an 8-month journey of just, you know, personality testing. It's not just about the auditions. Like Stevie said, it's a very specific role that they're casting for. You need to be able to sing, dance, act on camera, live on stage. You have to be able to live out of a suitcase and travel the world for 10 months of the year. And you have to love children. So it's a very small pool of people that they're picking from. And I never really thought when I was younger that I never thought about children's entertainment as a thing or a career path. But once I did it, I was like, oh my goodness, this is perfect. Like, this is everything I could have ever wanted.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, as a new dad, my son's like not even one yet, but I'm sort of like slowly becoming a connoisseur of children's television, just because I don't really have much of an opportunity. And you know, but the show is really just genuinely fantastic. And for our listeners that haven't checked it out, it is you know, season 16. It's available on American Netflix. I think it's I think there's 20 episodes, right around there, something like that, maybe.
25.
Is it 25? Yeah, there's a lot, and we've watched them all many, many times. I think the whole reason I didn't tell the listeners this yet, the whole reason this interview is happening is because I woke up in the middle of the night singing Gumboot Garden, and my wife rolled over. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, Gumboot Garden. It's in my head. And she's like, what? I'm like, it's from High Five. She's like, I haven't seen that episode yet. So the next day she goes and she watched the Gumboot Garden episode. And she's like, oh, yeah, that is really catchy. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be stuck in my head for a really long time. And my son loves it too. So, yeah.
That's amazing. We won't ask you to sing some now, man. But,
well, you could, surprise.
I love Gumb. Well, that's another thing that's fascinating about High Five as an American viewer. You use a lot of terminology and stuff that we don't use here. So I think that is even a lesson for young people that, you know, are viewing the United States. Like, I had to look up, oh, that's what a gumboot is. I'm like, I have no idea. We call them goulashes here, which is just absurd. Gumbooting's much more fun.
I think also the other term that gets a little bit misinterpreted is we wear thongs over here on our feet.
Something
very different in America.
I think Cisco gave a bit of a different meaning to thongs over there in the States.
Yeah, I think so too. If we wore those on our feet, it would be a very scandalous situation.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to talk a little bit about your travels with High Five, because I think it's really fascinating all the places that you guys got to go while touring. So what were some of the locations that you went to?
We spent a lot of time on the road, particularly in Southeast Asia. So countries like Philippines,
Singapore, Thailand.
Yeah. Indonesia. We spent a lot of time there. Also
Dubai,
New Zealand. We toured Australia about 15, 20 times.
Wow.
So really, like, and we actually, for the last few years, we would film overseas. So we'd take the whole production on the road and film in Singapore and also in Malaysia. So, you know, for about 10 months of the year, most of our lives were spent in airports going through security checks and eating plain food.
For 4 years, I didn't unpack my suitcase.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's incredibly special opportunity to travel, but really, like, our schedule was that intense that a typical, week or tour for High Five is you'd land in a country, the next day you'd do press, and then you'd start the shows where you do 3 1.5-hour shows a day with a 45-minute meet and greet in between each show. You'd try and eat something between the shows, so you'd wake up, you know, you'd leave your hotel at about 8 in the morning.
Well, for the girls, it was like 5 a.m. because we had hair and makeup.
Hair and makeup, so. Yeah. And then oh, wow. you wouldn't really get back to your hotel until sort of 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And you're doing that for for months.
Must be like very kind of glad that you're getting a little bit of a break, because I mean, as much as fun as that would be, it would just be intense. Like, I know after I travel for even a couple weeks at a time, I'm just ready to like curl into my bed and go into the fetal position for a while.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. It is something that you really go to some, you know, some special places of fatigue, because you really are testing yourself on a physical standpoint. You're doing 4.5 hours of cardio a day, and then just
but emotionally as
emotionally
well.
And mentally, yeah.
Because every time we get on stage, we are trying to connect with those children, because it's what keeps us going. And this isn't being cheesy, but honestly, you see them smiling up at you and you can't help but give that same amount of energy back. So it's not just any job. Like, you really have to connect with the audience, and you know that you're making a difference in those kids' lives. And it is quite emotionally draining some days.
Yeah, I remember early on, like, when I first joined, I was battling chronic fatigue, and you'd be going through that and then going on stage, and it's like, wow, like you're pushing yourself. But I guess the reason you're able to actually do that, it's this weird relationship with the audience where despite what you might be feeling backstage, the audience is so incredibly excited. Because, you know, for a lot of them, it's their first time in a theatre. This is a very new experience, not only for the child, but for the parent as well. And so as soon as you actually go out on stage, you're met with this wall of happiness and excitement that you just can't help but, you know, be, you know, the adrenaline just surges through your body. And it really does become this fabulous relationship with the audience, where you're totally invigorated by what they're giving you, and in turn, you're able to give that energy back.
And every show is different because of that. You know, we had the privilege with High Five to be able to change the show according to the audience. So if a kid ran up on stage and wanted to play, we totally embrace that.
Happened.
All the time.
Yeah, I definitely noticed the intensity. Like, on the outros of all those shows, you guys are essentially drenched with sweat, and there's these kids that are just like soaked from head to toe. I'm like, man, they were going hard for a long time.
Yeah, I feel sorry for those poor kids.
They
get a little bit of Stevie with each performance.
Yeah, right. Oh man. There'd be some hilarious moments where you'd be like, wave at the camera, and the kid's just like way too drained to even wave. He's just like a wet noodle in your arms.
Absolutely, those poor kids. But no, I mean, that's the fun part, when you actually get the kids in the studio and you get to see, they're so excited by the cameras as well. It's really special.
Yeah. Right. It's funny, like when I was setting this up, I just had this weird vibe that you guys were going to be completely nice, normal people. Which doesn't always happen when I do these interviews. Sometimes you interview people and you're like, oh man, which, you know, as a journalist, sometimes you'd be like, oh no, why is this like, but I'm so glad you guys are actually just incredibly nice. Like, the things you're saying are just so warm and so nice. So that's great. I want to jump on over to Super Dudes a bit, because I'm really interested in this project, and I want to know everything there is to know about it. Can you tell me just a little bit about because it's both a book and a show. So kind of tell me all you can.
Yeah. Growing up, I was absolutely obsessed with superheroes and comics and Michael Jackson. And so I would, every Saturday I'd go down to the local, you know, bookstore and just hunt through comics. I just loved the feel of them, the smell of an old comic, and just the artwork. Like, I would just get lost in staring at these pictures of these fantastical superheroes. And I love sort of the old sort of X-Men animation. All of that stuff I just thought was
incredible. I love that old X-Men cartoon. That was so good.
Yeah. I rewatch that all the time, man. As soon as that theme song comes in, I'm just like, that's my jam. You know, I've always been incredibly fascinated by superheroes and the idea of transforming and becoming something that you're not, becoming something super. And so I was inspired by a book that Ricky Gervais wrote. So the British comedian and actor Ricky Gervais wrote a children's book called Flanimals, in which he made up just these weird and wonky creatures, and he came up with funny names. And I thought, well, why not I come up with these weird and funny, silly superheroes that were child-friendly and non-violent? And so I worked on this book for a number of years and worked with one of my best friends, Nick Rudich. He's an illustrator, and we came up with a bunch of very, very silly superheroes that weren't violent in any way. Because I, you know, whilst I love superheroes, I don't like seeing kids running around with, you know, a bazooka or punching and kicking. You know, I like, that's just something for me. I'm like, I don't actually like that.
We
can be super without that. So Super Dudes has, you know, superheroes like Bubble Trouble and Merman Man and, you know, all these
things. By the way, I love that name. Merman Man is just the best name for a superhero.
He just wants to make sure you know he's a man, despite the fact he has a tail and he doesn't wear a top. But and we also have characters like The Hammer, which is, you know, absolutely a play on MC Hammer, but the kids don't need to see, you know, they don't, he's a hammer who wears big happy pants and holds a stop sign, you know, and obviously the parents get the reference and the kids also just think, hey, he's a funny looking hammer. So for me, I really enjoyed sort of creating the superheroes, the super dudes. And then I guess the whole premise for the book is that, you know, you want to encourage kids to create their own super dudes. And in testing for the book, we'd go in and we'd read them characters from the book, and then we'd give them a blank piece of paper and say, now create your own super dude.
I absolutely love that. I mean, the fact that you're just kind of fostering creativity in kids and having them come up with these ideas is just it's great. I think it's great.
That's so cool. And they just get it. Like, we get these super dudes where they'd write back and they go, oh, my super dude is called Hot Dog. And it's this.
Yeah, they got the concept. You know, they understood child-friendly, non-violent superheroes. Not one kid handed in a drawing of, you know, a guy with a gun. Or, like, it was all silly, creative ideas. There was one kid who handed in a drawing of Superman, but it was a man with his head was a soup bowl. And he had potatoes, and he would throw potatoes at the bad guys and also feed the homeless.
Because was a big bowl of soup. That's like a 4 or 5-year-old coming up with that. The creativity amazing. That they would come up with is beyond what anything I could create. So I really realized that pretty early on, that I wanted to foster that. And in anything creatively that we do, it's always through the acknowledgement and the eyes of a child. So anyway, we released the book and that sold really well. And off the back of that, I thought, well, you know, I know this world of children's entertainment and touring really, really well. So we created a stage show, and the composer from High Five, Chris Harriet, who's an absolute genius, he's the reason why, you know, those songs get stuck in your head.
Gumbo Garden, is that him?
That's it.
Yes.
You have him to blame.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so he's quite extraordinary, because I guess when you look at sort of major recording artists, like whether it be a Lady Gaga or Bieber or whatever, you know, these people, they have, you know, maybe 9 songs a year or every couple of years that have a nice hook. And of those 9 songs, there might be 2 or 3 that are memorable. Yeah. Chris Harriet, you know, every single one of those songlets and songs has an incredibly catchy hook, you know. Yeah. So there's this library of about 50,000 little songlets that are just incredibly catchy. Anyway, so he's a genius, you know, creatively.
And they are good songs, and I'm just saying that. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I think my wife and I can sit through High Five so many times. It's just the songs are actually fun, even for adults, and we sing them around the house.
And it would be the same for Tanika and I. We'd be at the gym and singing along to a Super Dude song or a High Five song, you go, oh my gosh, what's happening? You know, you get some weird looks. Yeah, so it's anyway, I just pieced together some creative people that I'd worked with over the years, and we toured a live show to the Philippines. We did an Easter show and a Christmas show. And what's incredibly special for me is you get kids coming to the live performances dressed as their favorite superhero.
Yeah, that's so much fun.
And each child, as we meet them, it's always, you know, like, hey, here's super Ash or here's super Tanika, you know, and it's really about empowering and acknowledging them because, yeah, that's, I guess, trying to use everything that I learned in my time with High Five. But basically, it's like I'm obsessed with superheroes. I love the whole idea of empowering and empowerment and that the whole idea that kids can believe that they can be everything they do is super as well. And if I, you know, I guess Superdo sort of puts that together in a very child-friendly, non-violent way that is also has that edutainment, educational accent as well. So, yeah, so it's been a lot of fun.
That's great. So what are you going to be doing next with it? Are you going to be touring, you know, globally? Like, what's the next big step?
Yeah, that's the plan. Like, I guess, like, I was really fortunate, like, with something like High Five was a very established, it's a really mature brand that's been around a long time. And, you know, I guess I've really learned from looking at different models for children's shows. But, yeah, the next step is creating a television show and creating, I don't know, like creating stuff that really helps children engage with the brand. So apps and creating the hardware and software that can really marry together with the technology and the philosophy behind my philosophy behind connecting with kids. But yeah, that's the next thing is sort of piecing all the elements together and making a TV show and touring and hopefully getting to the States and really blowing it up. Cause I think as you quite rightly said at the beginning, like there really isn't that many high quality kid shows, you know, that really tick a lot of boxes. And that not only one thing, something like Sesame Street does really well is, you know, the reason they have their Katy Perry's and their celebrities on the show is because they found that the child is 50% more likely to want to watch the show if their parent is watching it too. And
that's smart.
Engage with it. And, you know, for me, that's, you know, I really like, I believe in that philosophy as well. The importance of co-viewing and that you really need to connect with the parent as well as the kid because then you've got everyone on board and it becomes an event that, you know, like you can come along with your kid and you both enjoy.
Yeah, and then they invite you on their podcast and you get to hang out with the parent.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's really cool. You know, we've been working with, there's this great American a cappella group called the Pentatonics. I'm not sure if you've heard of them.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My son also really likes them as well. I think actually it's funny. That was a recommended thing that popped up after we watched you guys on Netflix. I think it was like, yeah.
So I've been working with their producer, and we've been piecing together some, you know, the pentatonic style a cappella music for children with, you know, through the Superdudes. So that's something that we're in the recording studio at the moment, just putting together.
So exciting! So much stuff on the horizon. Well, hopefully you guys end up coming to Orlando, and we'll bring out. We know many kids and many parents that would love to come out, and I'll come out and buy you guys a pizza. So.
Hey, yeah, man. We love it.
Yeah. So please come to Orlando, Florida one of these years.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Are you guys ready for some silly lightning round questions? They're like random, bizarro questions that are just kind of fun.
They're our favorites.
All right, here we go. Hang on to your butts because these are some weird ones. What is the first, and either of you can take these, or both of you, it doesn't really matter. They're just for fun. What is the first movie you remember seeing in the movie theater?
Beetlejuice.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah, that is Tanika's favorite movie.
I am obsessed. Believe it or not, I played Beetlejuice in my first live performance. I was Beetlejuice. I had a bald cap on with crazy gray hair sticking out sides.
Oh man, they do a Beetlejuice show at the Universal Studios here in Orlando. They do a live review, so it's still a big thing here. People love the Beetlejuice.
Yeah, it still is. And my favorite was the original Batman movie. Man, that was the first. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Good old Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson. You can't go wrong with that one.
Yeah, so cool. So cool.
I remember seeing that in the theater as well, the original Batman, and just being like, I think I had a Batman everything after that for a couple of years. Absolutely.
Yeah, every birthday party was a Batman party for me.
All right, so this one's a little deeper. Would you get along with a 15-year-old version of yourself?
No. Hashtag honesty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I would. I think when I was 15 years old, I was that point where I was trying to be someone that I was trying to fit in.
You weren't trying to busk anymore?
Yeah. I just lost my busking years. So I was like, oh, busking isn't cool anymore. I'm going to try and be. If you had said 13-year-old self, then yes. But 15, I was at a confused stage where I was like, who am I? Who do I want to be? And, you know, it wasn't really till I left home at about 18 that I truly discovered myself living away from home in another country where I had to start all over again.
Yeah, go ahead, Stevie.
I was way too emo. I had the black hair and the trench coats, and I was listening to a lot of Blink 182, and thought I was really hardcore. So,
I have a fun Blink 182 story. When I was about, I want to say, 16 or 17, they played my local record store for about 10 people, and I'll never forget it because it was like right before they went insanely big. I got to see them in this tiny little venue. So I was right there with you, probably with the hair and the long trench coat. Yeah. Being like, yeah, this is awesome. I too wouldn't get along with my 15-year-old self, unfortunately. It was, I think 15 is it's a hard age.
Yeah, it is. It is. Definitely.
All right. This one, will you sing the first thing that comes to your head?
On the island of Jamaica, in the green Caribbean Sea, there lives a frog called Sandy.
That's a high five song.
There you go.
I was talking of a Jamaican frog.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that episode.
That's always the first song that comes to my head now. I remember when I was filming the segment, I was pretending to be a frog, and they had to do like 10 takes of it because there were shoot-offs and the camera angles weren't right. And I just remember it was harder than any squat session I've ever had to do at the gym.
Oh, because you had to stand like a frog for like a couple hours. Yeah, that's pretty intense. Yeah, we're in the process of like training my son how to go to sleep in his crib by himself. So like it's a lot of like me at 4 a.m. hunched over a crib for like 2 hours. I'm like slowly, I'm getting like actual muscles in my nether regions that I didn't know should exist. You know,
that's so funny.
Oh, wow.
I can't get Tanika's song out of my head.
Oh, that's good. Okay, here's an intense one. You've been kidnapped. You can call on the characters from one television show to make a rescue attempt. Which show do you pick?
The Super Dudes. I need Merman Man.
Merman Man to the rescue.
Yeah, I need a bit of Merman Man and Bubble Trouble and Pencil Pirate in my life, I think they'd be very diplomatic in the way that they would be able to use teamwork to get me out of any sort of kidnap situation.
Yeah, I agree. Super Dudes.
Super Dudes all the way? Okay. If you could eat only one food for the rest of your life, what food would you eat?
I should be promoting healthy living, but it's got to be chocolate.
Chocolate?
Everything in the world just for chocolate. There are some healthy alternatives, though.
Yeah, well, I agree. Tanika would just eat chocolate. But my thing and my weakness, I nearly jumped on a plane to Orlando when you offered up a slice of pizza because that's my kryptonite is pizza.
What do you feel like, Steve? Just pizza burgers.
Yeah, it's pizza, burgers, whatever. We watched the McDonald's movie last night, The Founder, with Michael Keaton, and all we wanted to do was just head to Macca's and order the board, literally order everything on McDonald's menu.
That's dangerous. That's very dangerous. All right, only a couple more left, and then you guys are home free. You are stranded on a desert island, and a small box washes up on shore. What is inside that box?
I've always wanted a baby pug.
A pug? Do you guys
know what that is? That?
Yeah, it's a little wrinkly dog, right?
Yeah, like wrinkly with a squished face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can get those pretty easy. It's not like a lightsaber or something, you know?
These are lightning round questions. The first thing that comes
to mind. That's true. Stevie, what would be inside your box?
It would be the... first episode of Super Dudes, the TV series. Yeah, that would be my, like, oh wow, like, I'm okay. I can live on this island now for a while because, yeah, that'd be super cool.
That would be cool. That's exciting. Anytime you get to make something that's your own thing that you're making, it's the best feeling ever. You know, we've been doing this show for about almost 7 years now, and we only do it because we just love putting it out there and love, you know, talking to new and interesting people and new creative people. So like, I totally, totally get it. Like, making something that other people consume that they like is just a wonderful feeling.
We were in the recording studio yesterday recording some Super Dude songs. And there was this moment where I sort of looked at Tanika and the tears well up in your eyes as you're listening to, you know, the fabulous cast that we have sing these amazing songs. And I was like, wow, like, this all started from a tiny little idea I had about, I don't know, 7 years ago now, and here we are, and this didn't exist before, you know, it popped into my head, and we've somehow managed to make it and create it, and I really resonate with what you're saying, that ability to just go, wow, like, we just created this, and now it's something, and it's something that people really like, and I don't know, I find that also, it's what sort of keeps, I know, both of us going, because it's like, wowee, that's really cool.
You have to
create
your own stuff. Right. Especially as an entertainer, you know, we're usually working for someone else, but in order to feed that creative energy, you need to be creating your own stuff all the time.
Yeah, that's what you're saying is really resonating with me right now, because it's really, like, that's kind of why I stopped working in the classroom and why I wanted to sort of start doing this kind of stuff full time, because it scratches that creative itch, and there is no feeling like it. Like, working for somebody else is great because it pays the bills, but in the end, like, leaving something behind, that even if one person enjoys it, that's like the best thing you could possibly do, you know? Yeah. Okay, so the last question is actually about pizza, so I'm glad you like pizza. the perfect pizza is one topped with blank. So you can put whatever topping you want on it. We just need to know what the perfect pizza is.
Nutella. What? Tanika. Tanika's thrown out Nutella.
Nutella? I didn't even know that was a thing you could get on pizza.
And in Australia, we have a restaurant called Max Brenner. I'm not sure if you guys have it there.
No.
And basically, all things chocolate. And they have this thick pizza base with Nutella, marshmallows, candied pecans, and cornflakes and stuff, other weird toppings. But it's the best pizza in the world. I definitely have a sweet tooth.
Wow.
I would say so if you want Nutella on your pizza.
Wow.
Is that even pizza anymore? Did you put cheese on that? Or is it just like bread and Nutella?
It's a dessert pizza.
You could put cream cheese. Oh, you like could. That could taste nice.
Yeah, you think? Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. But I'd have to go with halloumi cheese. That's I like. I've got, my background is Greek Cypriot, so anything that sort of is a throwback, and olives. A good pizza has to have olives for me.
I'm a big fan of olives too.
Yeah. Which is, it's, that can be like, a lot of people are a bit anti olives on a pizza, but yeah, I really enjoy it.
They're strong tasting olives.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think we're almost out of time, but thank you both so much for coming to hang out. This has been so much fun. You guys are amazing humans.
Hey, thank you so much, Ash. It's been lovely to chat and have a laugh with you. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, good.
Fun.
Oh, good. Where can people find you guys on social media, and where can people learn a little bit more about Super Dudes?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Tanika Anderson, T-A-N-I-K-A. Anderson, and I'm on Facebook also as Tanika Anderson.
Yeah, and you can find me just Stevie Nicholson on all of the social media, and look for Super Dudes World. We have Instagram and Facebook, and we're really in the process of putting out some really, really exciting stuff, and also we have an app coming out soon as well called Giggle Button, so people can head to gigglebutton.com to check that
out. That's a great name. That's a really catchy name. Yeah.
That's really exciting. We're excited about that as well. So that's another creation that we're really excited about.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much, and we'll keep in touch. And maybe when everything launches and all the new stuff launches, you guys can come back and hang out some more.
We'd love that. So cool. We'd love awesome. That. Thanks.
All right. Take care, guys.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.
All right. So if you are here, that means you listened to the entirety of that interview, which was an absolute blast. And they were so much fun to have on the show. And I'm hoping they actually come to the States so I can give them high fives. No pun intended.
Well, I think you did.
That really was not. That was not really intended. It really wasn't. I just give a lot of high fives right now, especially with a 1 year old.
That remains to be seen.
It's like his one trick. His one trick he can do is like a high five right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm just going to do it all the time. No, but they were so much fun and just kind of like oozing with creativity. There was one project that I didn't get a chance to talk about that is incredibly cool and important. And it actually launches, I want to say, early next week. But Tanika has a clothing label that's coming out called You and May. And it's an ethical clothing label working to alleviate young girls from poverty in Burma or Myanmar. And she sort of is dumping everything into this you know, a way to help support impoverished children in Myanmar. And I think it's such an incredibly cool cause and something, you know, that I love when creative folks, you know, help people. So that is just really, really pretty fantastic.
That's really fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. So you, and if you go to youandmaylabel.com, there's going to be a link in the show notes. You can check it out and you can actually sign up for the newsletter there and get information about when it launches, and is set to launch within a week of this episode. So definitely check it out. I'm going to buy some stuff and help some kids and buy some stuff either from my wife or for my kid, depending on what's there, which will be cool. The other thing really quickly, again, there'll be links in the show notes, but definitely take a look at superdudes.com, and you know, Stevie's projects are coming up as well, and they look pretty fantastic. So lots of really cool stuff coming up from these two. They were really, really fun.
Yeah, it's very surprising, like listening to the interview. It's and it's not as easy a job as you think. Like that workload is a very heavy workload. And
it's
branching out into other projects and doing other things, which is really awesome. So again, it kind of goes along with that whole theme of like what we like to do here, which is, you know, celebrate creativity and kind of go on an exploration on different ways to exercise creativity. So I think that was a good pick, a good interview, Ash.
Thanks, man. I you know, it was fun, and I had a good time kind of talking to different people about different things. And when Scott and I were getting kind of prepped to record this section, I was telling him, like, I was like, you know, I really enjoyed talking to these two because it was something very different after, you know, 270 episodes of the show in almost 7 years. It's like, we've never had anyone from a children's show on before. And I was kind of getting tired of talking to game developers about their video games. But this was a cool change. And maybe we'll only do children's show interviews from now on.
Well,
I have a weird feeling that won't be the case, but you never know. I mean, you never know.
maybe you just needed something different. And we can spread our wings again, like including this.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All forms of entertainment.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to episode 271 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that's Ash, Matt, and Scott at NerdAppropriate.com. Or if you have a general question, that's nerds@NerdAppropriate.com. We have a Facebook page, which is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook, a Twitch TV channel, which is /NerdAppropriate on Twitch TV. And we'll be back in about a week, I think, with another episode.
That sounds
right.
We
have a lot to talk about. We've been playing and watching all sorts of stuff. So
we're kind of
oozing at the seams. Thank you, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
See ya.
At the seams.
Oozing at the seams.
Oozing at the seams.
At the seams with info.
I'm glad this podcast already has a title.
Oozing at the seams.
It's not that.
No, it's not that.
Thank you guys, and we'll see you next week.